It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. A very special night as we have a great guy on the line. I think he's great, anyway, in my opinion. Kyle from McGrane's Barber. What's up, dude?
Adjectives.
Yeah, I have to do it. Now it's become where I have to do it to aggravate you. And we also have Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Good evening, guys. Watching a little bit of the draft.
Well, I'll tell you what. We got to talk about this because Kyle wants us to talk about it. He's a big hockey fan. How about them Carolina Hurricanes, baby?
Yeah, you know, jumping on the
bandwagon.
You're on
the bandwagon now, aren't you?
Yeah. No, I got into it last night there. I watched the overtime. And, got behind the boys there in Raleigh there.
Didn't you get excited? It's exciting. It's an exciting sport.
Sure. Yeah, when you know, you got to support the local guys, and I'm happy they won, and I'm thrilled for all the fans that have followed the program, but that's not right. The team for the last several years haven't been much success in what, the last 10 years.
When Pirate fans are going out of their mind about 3-9 seasons, imagine a decade where you don't get in the playoffs. And over half the teams make the playoffs.
Yeah.
16 out of 30. You're like, gah! So I was so excited last night because that game went you had Tuesday night where the Pirate game goes, what, Bubba, 4 hours and 13 minutes?
Yeah, I think the game was a little late starting, but yeah, essentially something like that.
And then last night, it was over 4 hours. I'm like, what the hell is up with this four-hour ball games now? I mean, hey, the results were great. In fact, proud of the Pirates winning last night, which we're recording until Thursday night. So Tuesday and Wednesday night, we win both those games, and we'll talk about that huge series come up. We got a very special guest, one of our all-time favorites, and Kyle thinks he should be in, like, Mad Dog Radio, and that's Todd Graffinini, the play-by-play voice of the Tulane Green Wave, who loves the Pirates. So I know he loves the Green Wave, but he does have a lot of respect for us and certainly the program. So we'll talk.
Yeah, the voice of the Green Wave, Todd Graffinini, does a great job and very entertaining guy.
And we also have, we'll talk about the tour in just a little bit for the Town Bank Tower tour, and had a chance to wear a hard hat and make the Daily Reflector. So I'm moving up in the world.
Well, Dave, was that the first time you've ever worn a hard hat?
No, I wear them all the time. I was a member of the Village People, but that's the whole.
Well,
that's what I thought you were going with it.
That I can believe.
He's wearing Minji's Coliseum back in the 80s and early 90s. The Minji's Steel Mill.
Steel Mill. Yeah, exactly. We're going to talk some basketball, too. We've got so much to talk about, so little time, but we're going to try to do our very best. But great win for the Carolina Hurricanes as they play tonight. They'll be playing in Brooklyn, and our good friend Andrew, we got to give him a shout-out because Andrew is a huge
Canes
fan.
Does that series start tonight?
It does, yeah. No sleep
till
Brooklyn.
Jesus Christ.
I know, isn't that insane?
No sleep till Brooklyn. Well, there ain't no rest for the weary.
Yeah, he had that. That's Andrew's line. So Andrew, my friend, he loves our podcast, and one of our friends, he actually told me, he wants to come on with us and talk Pirates and Capitals. So,
no sleep till Brooklyn. And Dave, of course, you know who sings No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Bubba.
Beastie Boys.
Oh, my God, David, you ruined it. I was going to give Bubba the trivia question.
Well, you can throw another one at him.
Okay.
Anyway.
Dave, thanks for screwing that up. That's
what my job is.
You ruined the bit, damn it. You ruined the bit.
Well, I've got one for you.
All right.
I get this text last night from Kyle, who is a huge hockey fan now. I'm very excited about that. And next
I'm not,
year,
not a, yes, I'm not a huge
Wait a minute.
Fan.
Wait just a minute. Wait just a minute. Hold on. Hold the phone. Next year, I want all the guys, all the fellas, let's get together. Let's meet in Raleigh. Let's
all
go to
the fellas. Just
Andrew, and we got Brandon Simmons, myself, Kyle. We have Bubba. Maybe we get Terry Gallagher because he's going to move up to North Carolina.
Jay Sunhalter.
Jane Sunhalter. There's a whole bunch of guys that are Pirates who love the Hurricanes. And then future big-time fans like Bubba and Kyle. I'm telling you, if you go to the game, you'll be a huge fan. I'm telling you, it's so much better in person than in the TV. I do it because I can't afford the tickets anymore. But anyway, game three, I think it's Wednesday night. Next Wednesday will be in Raleigh. And those tickets are good luck with that. I'm sure they're going to be – the nosebleeds are over 100 face value, so it's no telling what the secondary market is going to go for. But good luck to the Canes, and we'll keep an eye on that series. Again, tonight at 7 o'clock, and that's going to be on the NBC Sports Network. And the I guess you get the NBC Sports app, and you can – watch that game tonight at 7.
Let's talk Pirates. Do the Islanders play that in the Barclays Center?
I believe they do. They're in Brooklyn, I believe. So, yeah. Okay. And before we get to the Pirates, I'm trying to make that segue. I almost forgot your bit. I get a text last night from Kyle going, is there a guy with the last name Walmart? And I laughed so hard because I was like, the folks in Eastern North Carolina, I love you folks. Love everybody in Eastern North Carolina. But you know where I'm going, Kyle.
So a certain segment of the population. It's a guy for the Hurricanes with the last name Walmart with a K. And there's a certain segment of the population here in Eastern North Carolina and probably other parts of the country that refer to Walmart as Walmart. Well, you can go down to the Walmart and get the 12-pack of Mountain Dew.
You sound like Jeff Foxworthy there.
You can go down to the Walmart and get a 12-pack of Mountain Dew and some Spam.
All right. You might be a redneck if you say Walmart instead of Walmart. Or how about
Target?
How about Targets? It's plural. The thing that drives me nuts. And Barnes and Nobles.
Now to the Targets.
And Belks.
Belk Tyler's.
That's something.
More old school.
But I will give you, I'll give everybody a pass. And Bubba said it is true. Sometimes I say Belks because back in the day. And Bubba's the man, and the fact of the matter is it used to be that people said Belks back in the day, and then sometime recently, the last decade or so, it's Belk now. So,
are you sure it used to have an S on it?
Yes. Maybe it wasn't correct, and I was hanging out with the wrong people who were not grammarians, but or have the lingo
you
when it comes to...
You can't dress them damn grammarians.
Are you communist? Anyway, I had anyway.
Build a wall around them grammarians.
By the way, can I just applaud Greenville? I needed to make sure I mentioned this too.
You can applaud. Go ahead.
The city of Greenville finally opened.
Build a wall to keep grifting out. I don't know.
Yeah, they finally opened up the 10th Street. What is it called? Connector. They finally opened that up in the last day or two, and I'm so tickled because I used to have to do all these, like, detours and everything just to get to the hospital. So thank you, DJ Conley. Thank you for that. But now we've got to get the work that they're doing on Memorial Drive. So I know everybody tuned in the podcast for that. But thank you for that, for DJ Conley and everybody finally getting that open because it was a real pain. How about
– did you see the hit piece? If you run out of toilet paper, guys – you need some. The Carolina Journal is a good alternative to wipe your ass with. Did you see the hit piece they put out on Alan Thomas?
Are you serious?
I did. Yeah, I shared it with you guys.
You know,
why do they do that?
Well, I'm not going to point any fingers or make any implications, but I'm just going to state a simple fact. Again, I'm not making any kind of implications by this statement. I'm just going to state a fact. Henry Hinton's cousin runs the Carolina Journal. Troy Dreyfus is Alan Thomas's best friend. You can do with that information what you want.
Well, that's totally ridiculous when Alan Thomas, he's actually a really good leader, did a great job as mayor of Greenville.
And I'm not going to say what I know, but I know some information on what they printed in that Carolina Journal about the Global Trans Park. And I can tell you the budget issues, while Alan Thomas was the leader of the GTP, those budget issues were not his fault, and I can't get into the information about that. But we'll just leave it there. And and we'll move on. And
You know what would be nice? And we have real journalism and not to the left and to the right. I'm so sick and tired of that.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's like...
It's so obvious. The paper that has been going after, that has been on the sign of Satan and has gone after Harry Smith, and now they're going after Alan Thomas. I mean, and like I said before, Hinton's cousin runs that paper, and Troy and AT are best friends, and you can just figure that out.
Yeah, well, as the old saying goes, consider the source, right?
Exactly.
So consider the source.
But there's a lot of people that won't. There's a lot of people that won't. There are a lot of people that are going to just read that garbage.
Oh, by the way, wait a minute. I got one for you, Bubba. Fake news. How about that? Yeah. Thank you very much.
A lot of those people are the same people that go to Walmart instead of Walmart. And the reason they go to Walmart lots of times is so they can buy some ammunition before they quit selling it, because they're going to take our guns away. Yeah, it's a lot of those same ignorant.
We're now the political objectives, so we've switched topics.
Dave and Kyle, speaking of some real news, did you guys see the tornadoes and the very severe storms that hit Texas and Louisiana?
I did not. When was that?
That's what I believe it was last night. I saw
some
tweets by Louisiana Tech baseball players today. A guy by the name of Lane Burroughs, who said, "We lost our stadium and some other facilities last night.
Oh, wow.
Some people lost their lives and businesses. We can play ball anywhere, and God's grace and covering is real. Watch our community and school come back stronger and better than ever. We are La Tech." And then and he had quoted a guy named Corey Diaz, and I'll put this on our social media, but that Louisiana Tech baseball park was just torn to shreds.
Well, I did not know that. I'll do some research on that. I might say a bit of a
storm chaser.
I'd love to do that.
You're a storm chaser?
No, I love. I don't. That's not right. I shouldn't say I love tornadoes. They fast
following stuff.
Yeah. So how I miss that, I don't know. But I'll definitely look into that. And I'm sorry that they lost their baseball stadium. Hopefully, you know, I would assume that, I turn a negative into a positive. You assume something like that is insured at a pretty high amount, so they should come back and be able to build a stadium nicer than they had.
Well, that's what I was going to really say. Maybe they – I'm sure a lot of people thought Harrington Field needed to be blown up, and so not that we don't want any bad thing to happen, but certainly –
No, and currently for anybody who lost their life or their homes, that's
awful.
That's terrible, yeah. And, you know, do you know – Bubba, do you know how widespread the outbreak was? Do you know if they were EF5s or 4s?
It said EF3, that the winds were anywhere from 136 to 163.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And that I know in Louisiana there were two or three people killed, and then I think the storms killed at least five people.
Oh, my God.
Once you get up to that EF3 status, anything EF3 and above is, you know, extremely dangerous.
Oh,
Fourth vibes are just unreal. But, you know, if you guys remember the outbreak, I believe in 2011, that hit North Carolina, that killed so many people in Bertie County and destroyed, was it 60-some homes up in Bertie?
Yeah, terrible.
That was an EF3 that was just about EF4 capacity.
That what you're talking about, Kyle, that can level places. I mean, it's
all in level with that same storm. Yeah. Sanford, if you got the same outbreak in 2011,
it destroyed a Lowe's store.
Yeah.
I mean, bam, it was gone.
Yeah.
And
a Lowe's,
and also
Bertie County. I'm sorry.
And I can tell you when that was. It's sad that I know this, but it was April. I think it was April 17th.
That sounds right. It was definitely April.
Yeah,
April 2011. It was bad.
Yeah, it was around that time, and the reason I remember that is I was working on air. And I had to go check on a NASCAR race for the Time the Nationwide series, which is now Xfinity. And I go into one of our stations at the 570 AM, and I said, "Hey guys, we're off the air." Little did I know, we found out later that day that the whole tower was like just knocked it over. It's gone.
Yeah.
And so it's been a long time. I mean, it was devastating. We were on the air for covering the weather, that storm, for like 7 hours.
Yeah, it was
and
a huge
I was supposed
outbreak.
To get off at noon. I was supposed to get off at noon or 2 o'clock, somewhere in there, and I got off at 7. So all the people think radio people have it easy. There are days like that you can work 16, 18 hours, and not even blink. So,
yeah, it was a huge outbreak that day. There was a in over in Smith Hill. There was a I don't know if it was I can't remember in 2011 if they were still Andes or if they were Highway 55, but there was a Highway 55 or an Andes that was destroyed, completely destroyed in Snow Hill. But what I remember the most, obviously Sanford, the damage down there with
yeah.
the blows, and then the 60-some homes that were destroyed up in Martin County.
It was bad, but we've gone from the sports objective, the political objective, and the weather objective in the short amount of time we've
been here. Baseball's going on, but for college sports, it's getting to the off season, so they got to talk about something.
We do.
Some more positive news. That's what today I sent this to you, Dave. I may have put it in the group text, but the Islands of the Bahamas showcase our men's basketball team will
be
playing that Friday, November 22nd through Sunday, the 24th. We'll open play against Evansville. And then if we win, we'd play the winner of George Washington and Missouri, Kansas City. And then on the other side of the bracket, it's Rice and Milwaukee. And then Liberty, who obviously had an extremely good season, and then they're playing Morgan State.
I'm very excited about it because Kyle's going to get his plane, and we're going to Kinston, and we're going to fly from Kinston to the Bahamas, and we'll go to see that great. We'll cover the event.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Baby, will you fire up the jet for me, baby?
That's exactly right. Nobody got that, by the way, Dave.
I know. It's a great inside joke, but that's what makes it fun.
It's an interesting lineup. It's got George Washington, Liberty.
That's Dooley's alma mater, GW.
Evansville, the Purple Aces have a good
program. I love them, yeah. Yeah, they're definitely known being from the state of Indiana. They
also
wear
go ahead.
Do they still wear the unique jerseys with the sleeves?
Don't believe so.
They quit doing that. That was a signature of them.
Because I believe when we played them back in the CIT, I believe they were wearing traditional jerseys then.
Oh, why did they drop that? That was unique to them. Why quit doing that?
I remember them doing it, and I remember Louisiana Tech's women doing it.
Yeah, Louisiana Tech women, I definitely remember.
But
we played them in the late 90s. We played them in the late 90s, and I remember they came to Greenville, and they played us here. I remember that night I was doing television.
You mean Evansville or La Tech?
Evansville.
Yeah, we played them here, and we played up there.
That was very cool. But
I heard a lady.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting because, by the way, guys, I know Dimitri, actually, so he was actually in a transfer portal.
Yeah, I had another note as far as that tournament. If I'm not mistaken, the head coach at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, is Kareem Richardson, who was on that 1992-1993 team that went to the NCAA tournament. So, and he ended up transferring and finishing his career. I'm trying to remember. It was one of those schools. It may have been Evansville, because I think it was Skip Schaefbauer who was shortly after that. Transferred to Illinois State. Kareem Richardson may have been Evansville.
And give a shout out to our friend TJ Long on that team who listens to the podcast. And certainly, I know.
Any kind of media coverage for that tournament? That doesn't sound like a tournament that would get national TV coverage, so to be honest.
I hope so. That would be awesome. If not, we're going to have to get our flights and book them now in the hotel rooms. So,
I'm saving money for the bowl game.
I do think we're going. Don't get me started on that. I do think we're going. So, you guys, we definitely need to make sure we time when Secure Bowl. I was talking to my barber, by the way. He agrees with us.
Brutus about, the Barber Beefcake.
Yeah, exactly. Hall of Famer for the WWE now. Yeah, you never know what we're going to talk about on this show. We don't know sometimes, but the fact is, I said, if I had it my way and both teams were eligible, I'd put Virginia Tech and East Carolina in a bowl game at Annapolis for the it's a military bowl, right?
I mean, it depends on
Can you imagine?
Virginia Tech went
to
that bowl last year, so they probably
wouldn't
get the military bowl again this year. But
that's true. They've got their own problems anyway.
Speaking of football, you guys see the season ticket updates. We sold right at 2,400 more than we had at this time last year.
Yeah, we're over 6,000 now.
Well, yeah, we're approaching 7,000 as of yesterday. It was 6,873, and last year we were 4,482 at this point. And then obviously we finished up last year. I'm trying to remember if it's 13 or somewhere in that area.
Right.
So, so no reason to think that that goal that John Gilbert, Ryan Robinson, and staff have set as far as 15,000, it can definitely happen.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And like they were talking, John Gilbert talked about, is that people wait to the last minute, kind of like paying your credit card bill. You don't pay it early. You always pay it right before it's due or on the due date. So, and we need to...
pay your credit card bill early, you can avoid interest on purchases.
And also, you worry about late fees, too, and hurting your credit, but... That's the credit card objective.
And many times with credit cards, the late fee occurs immediately the day after the due date, and there's no grace period.
That's true, too. Been there, done that. Doing better with that. You know, let's talk a little bit about the Tower Bank. The Town Bank Tower. I knew I was going to say that. Now you're
Tower Bank Tower. That's favorite thing to say.
Now you got me. I know you got me when you were telling me about that, and I was like, oh, man.
While we were on the tour, we actually had a chance to sit in with John Gilbert as he talked to the media about his thoughts about the tower, and let's go to that right now.
The Greenville community, really all of Eastern North Carolina, with the multitude of events that we'll be able to have.
You've seen it for a couple months now. How do you feel like the progress is going?
I feel really good. Every time I come in, I've been in multiple times. I was in last week. I see progress from week to week, so we anticipate the project to be finished in July. We'll get through a punch list of items, furniture, graphics. You know, we plan on having a ribbon cutting sometime in mid-August. And it's really important for me that not only do the people that have invested in this project get to see it, but I really want anybody that wants to come, I want to have a day where anybody that wants to come and see the structure, that they have the opportunity to walk through it, because they really will have access to it. Not everybody can sit in it. We only have so many seats. But you will be able to rent it for a multitude of functions, and I think it's going to be a great venue for the entire community.
Is there an area that excites you when you walk in? Is there one area you say this is unique and different that you really like about it?
Yeah. I think obviously the club level that we're on now, we've got a sports bar type atmosphere up here. And so I think as we talk about what can you use it for other than six Saturdays a year, this room will be used for a multitude of functions, weddings, recruiting we'll use it on. So this room really excites me.
John, the athletic department as a whole, how important is this whole project for the athletics department?
Well, it is important because I think the first thing is it passes the look test. When you come on our athletic footprint, you clearly see if you're a football recruit or someone that's interested in East Carolina football, this is a first-class facility. We've got a state-of-the-art stadium. And so I really feel like it will enhance our game day atmosphere, and it will enhance our recruiting as well.
John, you made some changes to this. You changed what you like to see the facility.
Hard to go back and reevaluate. I probably would have shrunk the media area really small and had 16 seats. Just kidding. I think when you look at structures like this, you want to make sure that certainly it's important to create sellable space, so I would want to make sure that we are selling and have the ability to sell every square inch of this area. And I think we've done a nice job with that. We've had a few modifications, but I'm really pleased with it.
As far as naming and branding rights, what other areas are you looking at selling?
Well, this club level area, we do have a naming opportunity that will announce in the near future. We do have a donor that's been very generous in that regard. And I think there'll be other opportunities along the way. I am really thankful for Town Bank for the commitment that they made. And really, it shows that people are seeing value in the resurgence of East Carolina athletics and our football program.
What kind of feedback are you getting back from the congregation, people that have come in here or that have bought places and things like that?
Very extremely positive. Obviously, I wasn't here for the previous structure, but clearly you can see from the tour today it's state-of-the-art, and people know that this is a first-class facility. I want to make sure we deliver on a first-class experience on game day. You know, we've got an outside group that's going to help us manage it on game day, a very professional group in the college. And so I want our people, as they come in and experience it, that it is a first-class experience, starting in the parking lot, the way they're greeted at the stadium, and then certainly their experience in the season.
How important is that in a transition year, not only because the football team is going through a transition, but the athletic department?
You know, really important, I would say, for our entire game day experience. You know, we'll be announcing some changes this summer to some different things that we're going to do. We've already announced that we'll let fans on the field after the game to kind of experience Dowdy Picklin in a different way. But we have some other things that we're working on from a game day experience. And it really starts when people are driving in. Driving in, parking their car, tailgating, it all plays a part. And I want to make sure that we're doing a good job of creating the best game day.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
The Helmbank Tower. So I wanted to talk about that, get your thoughts. For me personally, very impressed with the tower. I liked, obviously, still a couple months away before it's going to be July, before it's done. I think that they've done a nice job with the T.O. Loving?
They built all the stuff.
Yeah, they've done a great job with it. Looks like we're going to be on schedule, which is great. Construction projects, you never know. I don't want to speak out of turn. That's not my deal. But sometimes...
Well, you had on a hard hat the other day.
I did. It was a lot of fun. And we went up there and had a chance to view it. I thought that the... I was really happy for Jeff Charles, the media there in the radio side of things, and for Graf, especially for the away teams. They've got a really nice booth. The television... the booth is really nice, and I thought that the media room is really, really nice. I think the folks in the media are going to be really happy and not be in the basement or something like that. And
yeah, this kind of stuff really going to help us with recruiting.
It does.
Yes, huge stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think it pointed out to me of the things that we can improve upon when it comes to the stadium. It's kind of like when you replace your countertops, then you need the new floor. And when you see that beautiful structure on a 1960s and 70s base, I guess whatever that is for the stadium, then we need to pay attention to those kind of things and make upgrades as we go. Like we were talking about, Kyle, incrementally, and I think that's the. I want to see the concourse redone. It drives me crazy every year I go in there. I think about it every time I go near the stadium, and it's really apparent now. So we'll get that done. We need an indoor practice facility first before that. We got to pay this off first before even that. So hopefully we can get what do you think the indoor practice facility, 20 to 30 million?
I have no idea. I guess it depends on what you want to do.
I want to say
the
price tag for NC State was something like 12 to 14. I'll check that quick. I think NC State's.
Okay.
Which
is that's a really nice one.
Yeah, and it was built here in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
What about UAB? I wonder what they put into theirs.
I don't know, but they have a nice one, and they don't have the budget that their sister school, Alabama, would have, so.
Nobody has the budget element.
I know Texas. That. Oh, my God, yeah. They can't afford it. Texas is poor, man. They can't even afford to pay their assistants. So you didn't know
baseball,
that?
Baseball, yeah, of course.
And evidently. Softball, yeah. So they don't have enough money to pay. Anyway, I won't go there. What else can I really say? the state of Texas has a great reputation for
17.2 for so I was a little low, but 17.2 million for NC State.
It
is really nice.
And that was 5 years ago, so a little bit longer than I thought.
Check UAB.
I think it's going to be every bit. My feeling is $20 million.
For some reason, well, I'm thinking UAVs is $12 million. I don't know where I'm getting that from. But
we'll wait. What will happen is we'll wait another 10 or 15 years, so it'll be 30 by the time we...
No, we'll get an indoor practice facility pretty quick here, I bet.
Well, I think with the success of the UAV facility,
they don't have walls on the side. It's just a cover.
Who needs walls?
I think. Maybe.
Well, Trump does, but...
Are you sure about that? No walls?
Anyway, we'll keep talking. But I thought it was nice. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to one thing. It definitely jacked me up for is the football season. I'm already ready for it. But the good news is we still have baseball and softball. We have a lot of the spring sports still going on, so we're very excited.
Okay, Dave. Sorry to interrupt, but UAB will pay $4.7 million for the pavilion instead of $15 million for a regular indoor facility. So $4.7 million for their wall-less indoor facility that they termed a pavilion.
Okay, so they have a roof but no walls.
Right.
Okay.
Me personally, let's go ahead and do it the right way. Yeah, let's go ahead and do it the right way. And I understand where they're coming from financially, but I know we can pull that number off. It's not like it's the $60 million again.
And kind of this was back. This article was back in August of 2016, but kind of a funny quote. This is from Mark Ingram, the UAB AD. At least at that time, he said, just when asked, as far as the idea, the concept of building it without walls, he said it's just like throwing the ball on fourth and short. If it works, it's brilliant. If not, you're an idiot.
Well, me, I understand why they did it. Financially, that was the best they could do at the time. But I think that if we're going to raise the money anyway, we might as well do what we want to do the first time and get it right versus trying to do it and doing it just a little bit or halfway or whatever. I mean, I think we're better off going ahead and doing exactly what we want. And I think this, Mike Houston's going to be so successful here that you'll get that indoor practice facility a lot faster than we realize. I said sarcastically like 10 or 20 years, but it'll be in the next 5 years, I would think, 4 years maybe. That's my hope anyway.
I think it'll be in the next 3 years.
All right. What is this, like Price is Right?
Well, I bet $1. I think we're falling too far behind without one.
I agree with you. I think
it becomes a necessity, and you're a joke if you don't have it. I mean, build a damn indoor. That should have been a priority. It should have been factored in with the South Side expansion project.
What you need to do is
should have spent less on the stupid ass media tower that looks like a anyway.
Well, me personally, what we need to do is have a massive campaign the way that you would do at on the academic side of things. You say, we're doing this fundraising campaign. We need to raise $100 million. I don't know, just some number, big number.
Wow.
Well, I'm just saying, like, just say some big number like they have, like, for academics. And
can we sell barbecue plates?
We can. And we can sell them in front of the Walmart.
Yeah.
How about that? No, but seriously,
maybe we can have a fish fry maybe in the fall. You're in Martin County.
Exactly.
Maybe in the fall you can have a big chicken mall sale there.
In Beargrass,
that's right. There are people listening to this podcast who has no idea what chicken mall is. I guarantee
you got to Google chicken mall and then you understand.
Yes, Baba, do you know what chicken mall is?
No, I do not. I've heard the term, but I couldn't.
It has
it.
No
mole
in it. It's a chicken stew.
Yeah.
Primarily, it's chicken broth, crackers. A lot of people put boiled egg in it, and a lot of red pepper flakes, baby.
Yeah. I was waiting for Dusty Rose, American Dream.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I mean, there are variations of it. Some people will put cream in it, make it kind of a cream-style chicken mole. But it's primarily chicken broth, crackers, seasoning, you know, a lot of red pepper, and I know a lot of people put egg in it.
Yeah, well, we the food of the chicken mole. Hey,
that's Eastern North Carolina stuff right there, man. Chicken mole. I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah.
Northeastern North Carolina.
Yeah. I don't know if most people would.
I know you are chicken mole nerds.
Well, yeah, yeah. Pete, we've already learned a lot about tornadoes and chicken mole. And
I tell you what, if your power goes out from a tornado, it's good to have a big old pot of chicken mole.
No. Oh my goodness. So anyway, we need the indoor practice facility now. We need to take care of that. And end of story. And look, don't do the studying and all that kind of crap. Let's go ahead and say, if you go ahead and have a drawing and a rendering of the indoor practice facility, then we can go ahead and start on raising the money.
The drawing?
Yeah. I was doing my assignment. Don't you remember that from Saturday Night Live? You know, my name is Simon.
Hey, you know, I love drawing.
Yeah. So you got
great
that right. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Mike Myers, baby. One of my favorites of all time. But anyway, we have...
Hey, let's get to one of our guests before people just quit listening altogether.
Well, I'll tell you what, we got a big baseball series, right, Bubba?
Yeah, and second place, Tulane Green Wave coming to town. We always enjoy catching up with the Graf. Let's go to that interview now with the play-by-play voice of the Tulane Green Wave, Todd Gaffney.
Very excited to have back one of our favorite guests here on the Sports Objective. He's made numerous appearances, and this one I'm sure is going to be just as exciting, right, Bubba?
Yeah, Dave, anytime the Pirates and Green Wave get together, we always enjoy catching up with Todd Gaffney, the play-by-play voice of the Green Wave. Graf, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Glad to be here, guys. Anytime.
Yeah, we wanted to have you on a big series this weekend. We're very excited about it. I think it's going to be, the analogy I use is a heavyweight fight between two great clubs, and I wanted to get your take on, I know you're excited to come back to one of your favorite places in Greenville.
No question. You know, it definitely has grown on me over the years. Love coming to Greenville, love Clark LeClaire Stadium, and the atmosphere is just, it's college baseball, and that's what you want, especially when you get two teams that are going after a regular season championship like East Carolina and Tulane are. So no better place to be this weekend, and we'll see what happens.
I know since we last talked, of course, the basketball coach, Dunleavy, being fired and new coach now, you've got to be excited the way the baseball team has kind of been a little bit of redemption for you. I'm sure it's not easy to call those games, and especially in your case, as much as you love Tulane.
No, it was not an easy basketball year, to say the least, guys. I mean, we ended on a 21-game losing streak, and you know, I didn't think that was possible in this day and age, but it was possible because I saw it. And it was, it was tough. It really was, and of course, when a coach is let go, it's not just the head coach, it's the staff and,
right,
and everyone who works around them. And of course, you get to know these people, you travel with them, and you're working with them on a day in and day out basis. So it's never an easy thing. But look, and as I talked about after it went down, this is a results business, and a lot of people, you know, just they didn't care that Tulane had a bunch of injuries in basketball and had guys that were redshirted that were going to come in next year, and we had a bunch of freshmen that were playing. Nobody cared about that. It was all said and done. It was the fact that we didn't win a conference game and didn't win a single game since December 17th. And, you know, you could talk all you want about what could be, but, again, people don't really concern themselves with that other than how much did you win and how much did you lose, and ultimately it cost Coach Dunleavy his job.
And it's and another thing I always like to say, it's a results business, not an excuse business, right?
No question about it. And when the results are four wins, and it's just hard to overlook that. Now, you know, and look, I went on you guys' show right before we played y'all in Greenville, and
yeah,
we were, you know, we had kind of been close a couple of games, and of course the East Carolina game was really one that Tulane let slip away if you think about it, and it was games like that that, you know, you just, we were not able to finish if we were close. And like I said, it's four wins, and that's all anybody looks at.
Well, another thing I want to mention, too, is about how did spring football go before we talk about baseball?
It went very well, actually. And, you know, I tell you what, the fan base is really fired up about what's going to happen in the fall. Coach Fritz now, this will be his fourth year. He's had, you know, three full springs to really implement everything that he wants to implement. And it's his program now. And what we saw at the month of November, and of course winning the bowl game, and that momentum really carried over into the spring. And we had a great attended spring game a couple of Saturdays ago, and we saw a little bit of what the new offense is going to be like. We brought in Will Hall, who Coach Fritz knew from way back, and brought him in as the offensive coordinator. And it's basically a tweaked offense. We're still going to, you know, have the same type of spread read option concepts, but we're going to try to run a little more up tempo, not the, you know, Baylor type 7 seconds in between plays tempo, where you can't even take a breath between plays calling the game, but, you know, just to get more plays in, more snaps, if you will, offensively. We were probably giving up about 15 or so snaps a game, and they just want to, you know, just increase it that way. But with what we've got skill position-wise coming back, I think the big change you're going to see, and I think we're okay saying this because Tulane and East Carolina aren't going to play football next year unless we meet in the conference championship game. We're going to see the Tulane running backs and tight ends be implemented much, much more in the passing game, which it happened sparingly in the last 3 years under the former offensive coordinator. And we saw immediate results, not only during practice, but the spring game itself. So, you know, offensively, it's looking awful good. Defensively, I think this could be the most talented defensive line that we've had since 2002, where we led the nation in sacks that year. Not too shabby last year as well, led the conference in sacks, and all those guys are coming back. So it's, you know, the one question mark we really have is the defensive secondary. But other than that, everybody's back, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, guys, but there is no question Tulane can compete for a conference championship next year. I never thought I'd say that in football in the American Athletic Conference, but that's the case this year. It's kind of a perfect storm with all the returnees and the guys on defense. So, again, if we shore up the defensive secondary, I don't think there's any doubt that Tulane can at least make it to the championship game. Because, remember, we tied for the West Division last year with Houston and Memphis.
Yeah, the top of the West, like you said, was a jumble mess. That's what I was just about
to say. Wild West.
But,
yeah, the crazy thing is we actually beat Memphis, and they went to the championship game. So it was very, very strange. Very strange year last year.
And, Grant, before we get back to baseball, I wanted to mention we were talking about the basketball situation. I really love the hire that you guys made when we were setting up this interview or just a few minutes ago. You were talking about meeting with Coach Hunter. So can you talk about the job that you think he will do and just that hire? I saw the staff that he's assembled is one that's been intact for some time, and then he also hired a guy that had been in the state of Louisiana at Lafayette for, I think, about a decade.
Right, yeah. It's really been a lot of fun to kind of get to know him just a little bit. And again, when the season gets going, we'll work a lot more closely together. But I'll just go back to the first day I met him, which was literally the day before he was formally introduced to the public as the head coach. Well, he came in on a Tuesday and was going to meet with the team for the very first time at 2:00. So I went to the Hertz Center a little early because I just wanted to, you know, tell him who I was and introduce myself and just basically, you know, shake his hand and say, you know, I'm going to step out of the way because the next 24 to 48 hours, we're going to be incredibly hectic for him. And I know how that goes, guys. We say, hey, who are you? You know, it's just they look at you and they go, they don't know you from Adam, and they let you go. But in this case, I went up there at about 1:50, and the players were already starting to filter in. And I, again, I introduced myself and said I was very much looking forward to working with them and the staff. And he goes, look, I'm all about winning here, and I know you've been at Tulane for a long time. He actually knew that going in, and which was very, very solid. And he asked me to go in the meeting, and I was floored, guys. I was absolutely floored. Wow. Because he did not have to do that. So I went in the first team meeting with Coach Hunter and the team, and it was me and the athletic director, the coach, and the team. And I was pretty privileged. I felt very privileged to be there. And I tell you, he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to do that at all. So that's a first impression right there. That's never going to go away. And the energy and the enthusiasm that he's brought in the first couple weeks, you can feel it around here. And hopefully with the staff he's assembled, we can turn this thing around, because the Tulane basketball has been in the doldrums for a long, long time, guys. I mean, I've lived here my entire life. I've been a Tulane fan since I was 12, 11 years old, and I've seen that gym completely packed and crazy and you know, competing for conference championships, and it just has not been that way in a very, very long time, and I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing that again, especially now that I'm calling the games.
Yeah, that's something that we can really relate to as far as the personal engagement. We went through some of the same things here with our coaches and athletics administration, and the new regime, they've been nothing but very very cordial and very open door.
And by the way, Graf, I was going to tell you that yesterday I had the honor and privilege, John Gilbert, the new AD, and Ryan Robinson said yesterday they're trying really hard to be transparent. And they let us, the media, go on a tour of, it's not completed yet, for the new press box. And I happened to see where you're going to be very pleased. The voice of the Pirates, Jeff Charles, and yourself, you're going to be very pleased with the new setup for it.
Well, it's all about Jeff Charles. Trust me. He deserves the radio booth more than any other broadcaster, but that's awesome. I actually got a chance to see what was there when we came for basketball, and I'm certain it's a lot more complete now, and I'll get to have a chance to look at it in the next couple of days. But that's great. I mean, you look, Dowdy Ficklum deserves a first-class press box and radio booths and TV booths and suites and the whole deal. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And next time we get up there, I'll be I'm glad I won't be up on the roof in that closet. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I was going to say, I promise you're not in the basement for the new one, for sure. Trying to see the game will be really rough. I've heard some horror stories about, for the media, or the Patriots, they were talking about yesterday, is terrible for the media. And I know the Redskins has the my understanding is on the end zone their FedEx Field. So it's really difficult to call a game. But anyway, I could talk about, I'm a radio nerd, as you know. I could talk about it forever. But let's move to baseball. What are you thinking about this weekend? What are the thoughts from the Green Wave coming in to town? I know that, surprise, surprise, for both teams, the weather's going to play a factor.
Yeah. You know, we're to the point now where it really shouldn't bother either team. East Carolina's played a bunch of doubleheaders. I talk to Corey Glore often, text him, you know, almost every other day, just because I'm monitoring what East Carolina's doing, and he's doing the same with Tulane, just trying to stay on top of things as we're getting set for a head-to-head. But, you know, Tulane, like I said, if we do wind up playing a doubleheader this weekend, it'll be our fifth of the season and our third in the conference. So it won't be anything new for the Wave. It won't be anything new for East Carolina. You just have to make adjustments. I guess the good news is, if we do have to play a doubleheader on Saturday, it would be 2 9-inning games,
right,
instead of what we had to do on Easter Sunday, which was play a 7 and a 9. And you know, this is my personal opinion, and I don't want to go on a rant or anything like that, but 7-inning games have no business in the college game. They just don't. And I know it's due to travel and you know, if the umpires have to get out on getaway day and this and that. But, you know, that's a conference policy on a getaway day that you have to play a 1 7-inning game and a 9-inning game. The problem was, and we, you know, we begged the conference to do this. We had no travel plans. We bussed to Memphis. We were begging them to play on Sunday. As a matter of fact, Memphis actually was a proponent of it as well for us to stay over and play on Easter Sunday again, because A, there's no school on Monday, and B, we bussed, and they would not want to do it.
Yeah, it's a close ride.
Five hours. It's nothing.
It's not like going to Greenville or
no.
Or New Orleans.
But they would not let us do it. And now we have one less game played than everybody else. Well, Memphis does too. But that is a killer. And the objective in every weekend, guys, is to play three games. You've got to figure out a way to play three games. Now, the weather in Memphis was terrible on Thursday and Friday. I get it. But, you know, if it comes down to, hey, you know, let's make an exception. Let them play on Easter Sunday. Both teams were willing. There's no travel situation where a team had to sprint to the airport or anything like that. But now we're either going to be a half game behind or a half game ahead the rest of the year, and there's no tiebreakers with any team that we play the rest of the season. The funny thing is, and it wasn't funny at the time, but the same thing happened to us in 2016 when we got snowed out in Connecticut. Now, that's a lot easier to take up in UConn because they don't have grass, and I mean, they don't have turf, and they don't have lights at their field. So they got to play day games. Well, Memphis has lights. You know, you could find a way to get the three games in. But it almost cost us in 2016 because East Carolina just would not lose down the stretch. So we had to keep winning and wound up winning the final game of the regular season. We were in Houston. East Carolina swept UCF, and I know for a fact the entire team was huddled around Corey Glover's phone listening to me call the last out, which drove people nuts on the East Carolina baseball team. But we won the conference championship by a half game, and it should never come down to that. It just should never come down to that if it can be avoided. So I went on my soapbox. There you have it.
I feel the same way, especially when you look at Easter Sunday. Another thing is, those of us that are family-oriented, what better way to enjoy my kids and my wife, everybody, to come to the ballpark? Or I know Bubba and Kyle and I, like, if we had that situation, we're like, man, Sunday you can come to – if it was at Clark LeClaire, you come Sunday, you see the game Easter Sunday. There's a lot of Pirate fans that – they would go to church, and you come home, and you do a 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon deal. They go to church, go to the game, and the fans would be there for sure.
And look, guys, I get it. I get why they moved it to Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We played on Easter Sunday for years and years and years. There were a lot of Easters that I was not home. So, I mean, that's part of the deal. And I get it, and they wanted people to be home with their families for Easter. That's fine. I understand that. I respect that. But when it's coming to, you know, disrupting your baseball schedule in the long run, I think an exception could have been made in this particular instance. But it was not, and now we'll have to play it out the rest of the way, one less game in.
Now, Graf, you mentioned Corey Glover. We talk to Corey weekly on our show Extra Innings, where we take a look at the previous weekend's games, and one of the things that we've talked about several times with Corey when we've been taking a look at the action around the American is just the offensive potency that this Tulane lineup has. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I tell you, and I've said this a bunch now in the last month or so, this is without question the best hitting team I've seen at Tulane since 2005. When we were the national number one seed and advanced to Omaha.
Wow.
For our second College World Series appearance. I haven't seen anything like it in 13, 14 years, guys. This is a lineup 1 through 9 that can absolutely rake. You've got the national leader in home runs with Cody Hosey, who hit number 21 last night in a loss. But, you know, Hosey's hitting 415 with 21 homers and 52 runs batted in. And so I'm looking at we're at the point now where you're looking at the records in the media guide. And when you start doing that, it's that special of a year. And Cody Hosey is having one of the great years in the history of the school. And we've got a pretty long and storied baseball history. But the thing about it is, he gets all the attention. But if you look up and down the lineup, and here's the stat that, you know, we were thinking about it the last couple of days, but it really hit home when you see it in print. If you take Cody Hosey's home runs away, and now that's 21 of them. By the way, did East Carolina hit any home runs last night?
Let's see.
I don't think they did.
They had 42 coming in, I believe.
I believe that's correct. I think Spencer Brickhouse leads us with 10.
Right.
We had doubles and triples, but I don't remember home runs.
Well, again, to put it into perspective, guys, Tulane had 65 home runs before last night, and East Carolina had 42. If you take Cody Hosey's 20 home runs away, Tulane is still leading the conference in home runs.
Wow.
So that's the kind of power that has been on display all year long. And it's 1 through 9, guys. Jonathan Arteagues was our only starter who had not hit a home run this year, even though he hit 3 last year, but he was able to get one in Memphis. So now everyone who has played a significant role as far as the starting lineup has at least one home run, and most of those guys have at least 4, 5, 6 going into, of course, Grant Matthews, who's got 8, and Posey now with 21. So it's been a really good year. We're leading the league in 12 offensive categories. Not only do we hit, but we draw walks. We get on base. The team on base percentage is around 415, which this late in the season is just ridiculous. The numbers are there. But, guys, it has been a struggle on the mound, and that could keep us out of postseason. And it would be an absolute crime, a baseball tragedy, if this offense did not play postseason baseball, because it is not only a regional lineup, it is a super regional lineup. And, it's gotten to the point, and I was saying this on the air last night, and I'm not trying to be mean or negative, but if we don't score 10 runs in a ball game, we got to sweat it out. And that's basically what it's come down to in the last month. We have scored 10 runs in a lot of these ball games, but I will just say this, guys, going into this weekend, no Tulane lead is safe and no East Carolina lead is safe. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I was going to say, we might have about 12 hours of baseball at Clark LeClaire this weekend.
How long do you want you could literally be like an 8 or 9 hour a day. You could have a full day at the office just doing 2 baseball games.
I'm telling you, I've seen it all this year, guys. We blew a 6-run lead with 2 outs in the 9th inning against Wichita State a couple of weeks ago, and ultimately lost that game in 11 innings. And then 3 days later, had a 15-9 lead in the 9th inning at Southeastern, and almost blew that game and won 15-14. So, like I said, our pitchers, you know, they got to figure it out. What really has driven Coach Jewett crazy and Coach Latham crazy is the fact that, you know, these guys physically can do it. It's just something is up mentally, and it's a confidence thing right now. And if they don't figure it out, you know, things are going to stay the same, and they need to change, because, like I said, this would be an absolute crime if this offensive season is wasted at Tulane, because, you know, since they moved the bats to the present, the BB Corps bats and everything, it's not even close as far as the potency of this lineup and the batting average and the on-base percentage and the slugging percentage and the OPS and what have you. Guys, look up all the numbers. We've scored 120 more runs than the second place team in our league. I mean, it's just been unbelievable the numbers we're putting up, but it's not going to do a hill of beans if you can't get anybody out. And That's the kind of baseball we're playing right now. It's basically wiffle ball, is what Tulane's playing.
Yeah, that's something I was gonna. That's something I was gonna ask you, Graf, because I know I think it was like 2011, maybe 2012 that the BB core bats were implemented.
Guys, so, we hit 10 home runs in seasons. We hit 10 home runs two consecutive seasons, not in 2 weeks, a season. Cody Hosey's got more home runs in this season than we had back then when they changed the bats.
Yeah.
Combined.
That's crazy. Well, and you were talking about with baseball with both teams. It's such a cliche, but how does the pitching, especially the relief pitching, hold out for the Green Wave?
I'm not trying to dodge the question, guys. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. I was thinking about this last night. We have one reliable guy in our bullpen. Well, maybe let's say two. Justin Campbell, who's a soft-tossing lefty, who's really a lefty specialist, who's going to come out to, he'll come out to try to get Spencer Brickhouse out in a clutch situation. And then our closer, who is our second closer, because our first one just is – had all kind of control issues of Connor Pellerin, who's got big league stuff but just can't throw the ball over the plate. We've now given the closer role to Brennan Cellucci, who is just as nasty a left-hander as you will ever find on a baseball diamond. 95 from the left side with a hammer. He really doesn't have to throw his changeup because he can throw it by you. And the slider, like I said, is almost unhittable at times. The problem is we're having trouble getting it to Cellucci. If our starters, and our starters have struggled too, they have just really not been able to get you deep into games. And we need our starters to go six innings. If our starters don't go six innings, we have very little chance of winning a ball game, just because our bullpen as a whole is not getting the job done right now. Now, if we can get some quality starts this weekend from Roper and Gillis and Selesky, then we'll have a chance, because Campbell's pretty good. Cellucci's pretty good. When Pellerin throws strikes, he's unhittable as well. But it all starts with the guys who are starting. It really does. And, it's going to start with Caleb Roper, who, he probably threw the best game of his Tulane career against East Carolina last year in the tournament. And we wound up losing the ball game because our bullpen couldn't hold it for him, which was kind of a theme we had last year as well. But Roper has done it before. He's just got to be more consistent because he's got the stuff to do it on a Friday night. So, we'll see. We'll see. But, it makes you shake in your boots knowing you're going to a ballpark like Clark LeClaire where the ball flies out of there. And, of course, East Carolina right now, what is it, 13 in a row in that ballpark now? They just don't lose a whole lot at CLS. So, we'll see. I know here's the other thing. East Carolina can pitch. There's no weaknesses. Not only can they hit, but they can pitch. They're leading the league in ERA. So the old axiom is good pitching beats good hitting. I can tell you this much. Our hitters aren't going to be intimidated one bit going into the ballpark. And I know you guys have starters that can pitch and guys out of the bullpen who can make quality pitches. I will just say this. If they make mistakes, they're going to get hit. They're going to get hit. So it's all about making quality pitches against this lineup, because we're not afraid to take walks either. And that's why the offense has been so successful this year, because not only are we swinging the bat, but we've been very, very patient. Our strikeouts have been cut almost in half from a year ago, and we're getting on base via the walk much more. And when you get guys on base via walk combined with the way you're swinging the bat as far as hits and doubles and triples and home runs, well, that's when the runs start to pile up, guys, and that's the way it's been this year.
You know, it's exciting with about these two teams, like I was saying or very early in the interview, with two heavyweights, because the interesting thing for Cliff is this year is got to be his deepest squad yet. And now the problem you have is that we've seen, I know, Bubba, we've talked about, is you have literally a situation with a guy like Trey Benton, who's been a Friday night starter. He's coming now as more of a middle relief kind of guy. And if you get him to, when you were talking about the word confidence, The kid has got tremendous talent being a junior and probably has a chance to be drafted. But he's the X factor to me for the whole pitching staff. If you get him really like zoned in and his confidence is back, then that's to me the question, not whether we can go deep in the tournament as far as the regionals and super regionals or even Omaha, as a guy like him to really step it up. And he started to, Bubba, I know you alluded to, he's 4-0, right? I mean, he's still doing well. It's just not as a
struggle. Trevor got the start last night. Didn't get the decision, but Trey pitched very well last night. And like you said, he's certainly an X factor moving forward. But Graf, before we let you go, because I know we need to wrap this up, but back several weeks ago, back toward the beginning of the season, we really loved that call of the walk-off against Ole Miss. That was tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of a harbinger of things to come, guys. I mean, that was a 13-12 game back on that Saturday in February. So, and we didn't know it at the time, but, you know, that was really going to be more of the norm than the exception to this Tulane baseball season, winning these double-digit, both teams scoring double-digit types of games. But, yeah, it was almost a little mini deja vu, beating Ole Miss again. This time, of course, it was in New Orleans, and it was a walk-off. The Jake Rogers home run was in Oxford, and it was the top of the ninth, so that wasn't a walk-off. But still, I got a lot of texts and calls after that one who heard the highlight from it, and that was a lot of fun. I felt really good for David Bedgood, who hit that home run, because that kid been through a lot injury wise and was able to come back 100%. He's got a sweet stroke from the left side, and that's another guy you're going to see this weekend, who's our DH, and you know, he didn't do a whole lot last year, just a freshman from Sherman, Texas, and now he's hitting, you know, 280 with six home runs and 25 runs batted in. So again, just one of the cogs in the lineup that you're going to see. And you know, the lineup we're going to put out there on, you know, either Friday or Saturday is really the lineup I think that can take Tulane into the postseason if the pitching holds up.
Well, Graf, I have a quick question for you. What's the over-under that you'll be at A.J. McMurphy's before or after the game? I assume it'll be after the game.
Well, you know, I'm not going to go there because I'm an O'Cools guy.
There you go.
Oh yeah, I'm an O'Cools guy and I'll be there with Corey and Malcolm and Clip so if you want to see us this weekend, we're definitely going to be there Thursday, no question about it. And I know the draft's going on. I got a quick. I know we got to go, guys, but I got a funny story for you. 2 years ago, we were there. And it was draft night, and we were – the Saints had two picks in the first round, and I'm, you know, all about we need to get a linebacker. And by that time, we were the 11th pick. Let's just say that I was a bit overserved. And so we draft this cornerback from Ohio State, Marshawn Lattimore. And I'm going, Lattimore, this guy, he's injury prone. Who is it? Come on. So I spent the rest of the night female dogging it about Marshawn Lattimore, who I just was so upset that we drafted this guy because he had hamstring problems at Ohio State, this and that, injuries and this. So I'm completely angry. We get to the end of the first round, and I'm thinking, all right, we got to get Reuben Foster. We need a pass rusher. And turns out that San Francisco, the pick before, takes Reuben Foster. So now I'm really, really bummed out. And so the next pick, we go, all right, and with the 20, whatever pick it was the very end of the first round, the Saints pick offensive lineman Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin. And I'm going, Ryan who? What? Who is? I mean, and then I just completely lost it. So it just shows you how much I know, guys, because those two have become absolute must stalwarts for the New Orleans Saints the last couple of years, with Lattimore, of course, being the defensive rookie of the year, and Ramczyk has started every game the last 2 years and has just been a rock on the offensive line. So don't ever ask me about the NFL draft. I have no clue.
And who does? Who does, Griff? Well, thank you so much for the visit. We appreciate you. Hopefully you have safe travels to and from Greenville, and we'll see how things work out this weekend. It's going to be rather interesting.
Yep, and again, I know no matter what happens on Friday with the weather, I know Saturday and Sunday is supposed to be beautiful, and I'd expect great crowds out there, and again, just a wonderful atmosphere. So very much looking forward to making the trip.
Thank you, Graf, and hopefully the weather will turn out good for the Pirates and the Green Wave this weekend. And as you heard me say there, Kyle, a heavyweight battle tonight, a heavyweight bout this weekend with the Pirates, and we don't know about that. As we're taping this and recording this, the weather conditions are kind of iffy tomorrow, not great, so for Friday, but hopefully it will turn out okay.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, if not, then we'll have to play two on Saturday, but it'd be nice.
Surprise.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get the game in Friday.
And let's beat the record of 5,565, I think. It's 5,565.
Yeah, 5,581.
81? Okay. You'll raise me 16 more people. Well, hopefully we get a whole bunch of people out there, and we get the most important thing is to win the series, and it'd be nice to hear that Broom's out again for a sweep. We'll see how it turns out. But
I'd be unreal
if the Pirates win this weekend, right, Bubba, help me out. Isn't it like about a 5.5 game lead? Isn't it like 2.5 games now?
Yeah, the Green Wave are 8-3, and the Pirates were of course 11-1. So yeah, if we just take care of business, if we just win the series, but yeah, if we sweep, obviously we'd be 14-1. Tulane's 8-6. So yeah,
even if we only win one game, we're still in first place.
Correct.
So I mean, that's I'm excited about.
I've heard so much, and like in that interview with Graf talking about that Green Wave lineup and how potent it is. I'm looking forward to seeing it against Jake Agnos and company.
I think it's going to come down to what I'm interested to see is not only that, flip it. I'm interested to see how their pitchers handle our hitters. I think if they're not careful, especially the middle relief or the relief pitching is going to be what I'm interested to see how they handle the Pirates. So I think he said pretty much they're going to have to go, the starters, by the way, Kyle, are going to have to go 6 innings. And if they don't go 6 innings, keep that in the back of your mind. If they don't go 6 innings, then it may be trouble for the Green Wave. But we'll see. You never know how that plays out. Baseball is such a funny sport. And you can have a handful of guys pitch a couple innings, and bam, you're good. So, but I think that's something to worry about, especially since you're playing a 3-game series with the best team in the conference being the Pirates.
Yeah, it'll be a good competitive series. Tulane's good. We're really good. And if we take care of business this weekend, if we win 2 out of 3, it's going to be hard to catch us.
That's right. I don't see the Pirates. I really don't see the Pirates having a major collapse between now and the end of the season. So this one's going to be huge. And they're all huge, like Corey talks about. But Cincinnati coming up. I mean, we've got them, right, Bubba?
Yeah.
North Carolina.
The other home conference series will be against Memphis, and then we travel to Cincinnati and also Wichita State.
That's right, Wichita State. That's
so
the
this,
one I was
this will be the first time we've been out to X Stadium in Wichita since 1991, I believe, when we played in the regional out there. The Shockers were number one in the country. Tommy Eason was on that team, and we were up 5-0 on the top-ranked Shockers and ended up losing that game 10-5.
Yeah. Bubba so impresses me with his knowledge about the Pirates. That's really impressive. Obviously, I'm a fan, but I don't remember all that stuff. Bubba's the man. For sure. So what do you think, guys? You, as far as the Pirates, you feel confident this weekend? How do you feel about how do you think we do?
I need not to be confident. I think we win the series 2 out of 3. It'll be competitive.
That's where I'm going. I want 3, but I feel like Tulane will get one of them. We'll see how it goes, but I want a sweep really bad.
I agree. The only series we've lost all year is out at UCLA, obviously, and in the most series, I think we have six sweeps now. So, yeah, I think we'll at least win two out of three.
So you think we'll get a seventh broom, Bubba?
If I had to project one way or the other, I'd probably go two out of three just because of, even though we've done it six times, I think with the way Tulane swings the bats that they'll probably find a way to get a game. But with what Todd said in that interview, with the way they said what they think they need 10 runs to win a ball game.
That's a lot, man. That is a lot. Double digits, like every game to win or to give you to be in the conversation to win. That's definitely a lot. But good luck to the Pirates. That's going to be a great series, and we want folks to get out and pack the stadium. Looks like Saturday and Sunday, Kyle, the weather's going to be very good. We definitely know that ahead of time. So beautiful. It's not going to be too hot. So definitely get out there and support your team.
Right, yeah. No, good weather. Go watch the Pirates try to keep winning.
And
way
Bubba,
to Omaha.
That's right. And, Bubba, I know that we need to give some love to the women's golf team. They're going to their 13th regional, and they actually, how many years is it, Bubba, that we've had a program? It's not been, I know it's this century, right, the last couple of decades. So it's pretty impressive that great coach.
I don't recall exactly, but, yeah, I think it was the early 2000s, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And like you're saying, the program's not much more than a couple of decades old, something like that. So just a remarkable job that Kevin Williams has done. He's been the coach of that program all but I think it was like 2 years when we had Kim Llewellyn, who had come in from, I think it was UVA.
And I'm excited for the women's golf team. If folks remember to follow the program closely, last year, I know, Bubba, we were talking about recording this, and Kyle, they actually went down to Austin, and I think they had like food poisoning or something, and they didn't have enough players to play. They had to forfeit, and they had to, obviously, it was sad because they had a good season. And then that's what you're playing for is postseason, and you can't even play it. So I know when we had Kevin Williams on, I love him as a coach. I think he's tremendous, and I'm glad to see the Pirates get back in. Bubba, explain again the women's golf, the tourney, how that plays out.
Yeah, it's a 72-team field. There are four regionals. And the regional we're playing in, we are the 14th seed out of 18 teams, and that's down in Auburn. And the name of the course we'll be playing at escapes me. So, but we'll reach out. Maybe we can have Coach Williams on prior to the ladies heading down there.
That would be awesome. And good luck to the Lady Pirates, because that's a huge feat for them. And it's amazing how the positive vibes we're getting now from John Gilbert and Ryan Robinson and everybody that's they already had a lot of great people that were staff and administration that were great. They just had to suffer through off the air and off the record. I'm just amazed at how many great people suffered in the Ward building during the conference years, but glad we don't have to worry about that anymore.
He's an ass clown.
Next, like the barber says, next. I saw a whole bunch of real estate, and I was looking at it like they were saying like the best places to live. There was a story about that for my radio show, Forbes magazine and Forbes.com. And I saw a whole bunch of places in Florida, and I thought about, wow, that's where Jeff Knopper is now. At least I don't know. It's kind of like, what was it growing up, Kyle, when they had a wrestler and they didn't want you to know? It was Parts Unknown.
Parts Unknown, yeah.
You remember that? Like mysterious. Yeah. The Kyle, the Barbarian Barber, and he's from Parts Unknown, weighing in at 283 pounds. It's Kyle, the Barbarian Barber.
Walter, a little what?
And Dave, just a little more, just a little more history on the women's golf. It's a 19-year history of the program. So
13 out of 19, Kyle. How about that? Yeah. 13 out of 19 years, you go to the regional. You go to the postseason.
And even though Auburn is hosting this regional, it's actually being played in Opelika, Alabama, at the Saugahatchee Country Club.
Oh, yeah, the Saugahatchee Country Club in Opelika.
Yeah, it's down there by the Walmart.
Yeah, I've been there.
You've been there.
Yeah, I've been there. It's there. It's
You played golf there.
I did with Saban. Me and Saban.
You drank some brewskis. You're talking about football.
Yeah, and we played. We played a couple rounds there.
He actually told you how many more years he's going to. Didn't he tell you how many more years he's going to coach?
Yeah, four. So
like 20
four more.
Four more. Okay.
Yeah, he's going to retire after 4 years.
How's coach doing after that? Was it a hip replacement?
Yeah, 2 days. He only missed 2 days of work. How about that?
Yeah, he's doing good. Hip replacement, and I talked to Nick, and he by the way sends his love, and he's doing good. A little sore. But,
what about Coach? What about Coach Ogeron?
Coach Ogeron,
Does he like them? Do they get along? I mean, you're close with Saban. So.
Well, Nick kind of talks about Coach O behind his back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Speaking of fake news.
Coach O also talks about Nick behind his back, but nobody knows what the hell he's saying. So.
he could be complimenting. We don't know.
No.
All right. That's good stuff there about Nick Saban. I'm interested to see how many more years, if he retires in 4 years, we'll know that Kyle definitely played golf with him. So, or at least it sounds good. And if you believe that Kyle Barber plays golf, I've got some oceanfront property for you in Arizona.
I don't play no damn golf. Walmart.
You don't play golf?
Hell no. I played putt-putt this past summer. That was the first golf I played since I was a child.
Wow.
Indeed.
I can see Kyle right now on the range. I can see him on the course. He can actually hit. He's on the links, Bubba. What do you think? And wearing a green jacket like Tiger.
Yeah. Go out there in the Pirate Club tournament.
he's a scratch golfer.
he would end the day with a large gallery.
Yeah, I could see that right now. Everybody
would do what,
Kyle?
Large gallery, a large following.
Not a lot of people.
Well, it was a fat joke, Bubba.
No,
it was not. Joke. You don't follow golf.
A lot of people following you.
Yes.
Because it would be entertaining.
Yes,
that would be fun. At least he would have jokes.
It would be like the Crosby golf tournament back in the day, where you know comedians were playing there, or just athletes,
celebrity pro am.
The Crosby golf tournament.
Crosby.
Bing Crosby.
Oh, Cosby.
Not Bill Cosby. No.
I thought you said the Cosby golf tournament.
No, that's the penitentiary tournament or something. I don't know.
We played the golf and didn't want to take the ladies upstairs.
Oh, my God.
Jello pudding pops.
Give them a jello pudding pop and do some major dancing on the face.
He says... That's like the worst Bill Cosby I've ever heard in my life. Oh, my God.
The best Bill Cosby you've ever heard in your life. Hey, did you guys ever used to watch The Cosby Show?
I did, yeah. I loved it.
Did you hate Elvin? I used to hate Elvin.
Who?
Elvin.
Elvin?
You never watched The Cosby Show, you lying.
Yes, I do.
It.
Yes, I know I did.
Elvin, man. Elvin. He was married to Sandra.
Oh, yeah, the oldest daughter. Yes, yes, yes. I know exactly.
I hated Elvin.
It's like, why did that do? What was that? He had like no purpose. Just so we,
you know, Elvin Hayes.
Who's Elvin Hayes?
I'm just picking.
I don't know. Anyway, our show is going nowhere fast. So, do you guys have any final thoughts before we go?
Elvin sucked on the Cosby Show.
Okay.
There's a song.
There's a new song that we have out now for our former chancellor. Cecil's Gone. We'll have that in next week.
We've got a new song called Cecil's Gone. Okay, yeah, we'll write that. That's something we can work on.
Well, Tuesday's, you know, it could be Tuesday's Gone, but we'll have Cecil's Gone. What do you think?
With the wind.
And hopefully not to Georgia, because we have our good friend Terry Gallagher.
I don't know where the hell he goes. As long as he gets out of Greenville, he can go live in parts unknown with Jeff Goff.
They can have the condos side by side. That would be tremendous. All right, Bubba, do you have any final thoughts?
I do not. But no, guys, Kyle, Elvin Hayes is a famous basketball player.
I know
you're not that famous. I never heard of him.
I have. I know you're talking about. It is basketball. I do love it. Good luck to the Pirates. Obviously a big weekend for on the diamond, and hopefully we can get at least a series win. That would be awesome, winning 2 out of 3. But boy, that broom coming out for the 7th time, or we think it's the 7th time, will be awesome. So good luck to them. First pitch tonight is, as of right now, we're recording this on Thursday night at 6:30. So if you're listening, and there might be some other news, you never know with the way the weather's going to break, but we'll see how it turns out. All right, our next podcast will be with Corey Glore on the extra innings. We may have some other great guests, and that'll be released definitely Sunday night or Monday. Until next time, for Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.